Thanks, Jan.
Hello, good morning. You're very welcome to the programme. Between now and nine, pesticide clean-up in Cavan. The Navy saves the day in Kerry. The accidental farming TikTok superstar in Limerick. Honesty boxes in Clare. Oysters and coffee in Sligo. And flowers from Kerry. Good morning to you, first countrywide of autumn. And doesn't the weather feel aligned with the seasons this morning? River health in the headlines throughout the week as a plethora of government agencies try to figure out who or what is responsible for killing tens of thousands of fish on the River Blackwater in Munster. At the other end of the country, though, Uisce Éireann is running a pilot project to reduce the amount of pesticides going into lakes and rivers. They think it's going to be easier in the long run for them to stop pesticides getting into our drinking water than it is for them to have to take them out. So 35 farms in Cavan had individually tailored plans worked out for them in 2023 to reduce pesticide usage. On Wednesday, I visited father and son, Jimmy and James O'Donoghue, to see 2 years on what difference their plan had made.
Come on, come on. They're going to get 3 kilos a meal of a finishing ration on grass now over the next 2 months.
Have you ever seen prices like you're getting now at any point in your career?
No, definitely not. And it's great, and I suppose beef farmers have been left behind a wee bit maybe over the last number of years, and it's just great to see that we're finally getting a return for our produce.
You're going to give me the not before time speech, are you?
Exactly. So we're hoping that it's here to last.
Jimmy and James's land in Drumminick is, as the name suggests, in the heart of Drumlin country, a landscape that presents any farmer with a keen set of challenges.
As you can see, Philip, we're on the top ridge of the Drumlin here now, and we're lucky in the regard that our land kind of runs this way and it falls off either side of it. And like the top parts of the hills are generally dry, but as you can see when you get down next to the now next to drains, like you're falling off a good few metres to get
so
there.
Easy to farm up here, much more challenging down there.
Down there, yeah.
You know, some years you'll get away better than others. It's just... but we're lucky we have the hills, and the hills are dry, you know.
The wet land at the bottom of the hill favours the growth of rushes rather than grass, and for years conventional wisdom was that you would spray MCPA to control those rushes. But it's a herbicide that once it enters a waterway has been detected up to 30 kilometres away from where it was first sprayed. The Uisce Éireann project has made a weed licker available to farms that need to spray. Basically, it's a roller towed behind a quad, and it targets the herbicide directly onto the rushes rather than the shotgun approach of spraying from a tractor.
The pesticide gets onto the brush here on the roller, and when it hits a weed, it makes contact with the weed then, and the pesticide is left on the weed. It's only weeds that will get it. And the beauty about it is here, it's pulled by a gator, a four-wheel drive gator, which is very easy.
Very light on the ground,
light
absolutely.
So,
not only do you have the advantage of not having to put a heavy tractor into your fields, you're also not using a boom and spraying massive amounts of pesticide on everything.
That's correct. And it's reducing the amount of pesticide that ultimately needs to go out too.
The weed licker is a useful tool, but Jimmy and James have found that with better attention to soil health, they really don't need to use pesticides at all.
Our knowledge on it increased. We spread a lot more lime. Which has been a massive benefit to increasing the pH of the soil and reducing the weed burden. And we've spread, we've been more targeted with our fertilisers and our slurry.
It's really all about the soil at the end of the day, isn't it?
It really is, yeah.
If you have the acidity right, those weeds are not going to flourish.
Absolutely. And I think since 2022, we were on that journey before that, trying to increase soil fertility. And then with the help of this project here, we haven't used any pesticides since 2022.
And prior to that, how many times a year would you have been in spraying, do you think?
We wouldn't have sprayed any more than once in a year. But unfortunately, however, you're going in every year. You know, to do this certain section of the farm here.
There wasn't a year that you could skip it because you knew those rushes would be crowding out the grass.
Absolutely, yeah.
Most of our treatment plants aren't actually set up to treat for pesticides. You need special treatment processes added on. So the easiest and the most sustainable way to remove pesticides is to stop them getting into the water sources to begin with. My name's Lorraine Gaston and I'm the catchment manager at Uisge Éireann, responsible for drinking water source protection. We chose this catchment in Cavan, the Lara catchment, because it was typical of the environmental setting where we were seeing similar exceedances of pesticides. And the particular pesticide of concern here is MCPA.
The one that's used on the rushes.
That's right, yeah. It's particularly mobile and persistent. It can wash off the land really easily into our watercourses, and then it can hang around for a few weeks as well.
Early days in this project, but what kind of improvements are you hoping to see?
What we want to see in this project is a reduction in the load of pesticides in our watercourses. So we actually measure the water quality at various points throughout the catchment. And we also compare the results to another catchment where we're not actually doing any interventions at all.
So you have a control.
Yeah.
This is the test area.
Yeah.
At what point are you going to be able to conclude whether this has been a success or not?
Early indications are showing that we've got a slight decrease in the load within this catchment, so the trend is moving in the right direction, whereas in our control catchment, we've seen an increase there. And so that's looking positive.
So we're coming to the end of the part of the farm where the project dealt with, and I suppose this is the most difficult field on the farm, and it was highlighted to us. This was the boundary fence that was always there along here. This was identified as a flow path here. So what we've done here is we've put in...
So your water from the yard directly up at the top of the hill there was coming down here and carrying God only knows what with it.
Correct. So as a result, we've put in 460 metres of native white thorn hedge, which will, which will intercept that pathway on the way down.
Do you know this is how they made the sound effect for the blaster guns in the Star Wars movies back in the 1970s?
With the fences, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can hear it, yeah, you can hear it.
I'm not sure if your fence would have been a good candidate.
No.
It needs to be a bit tighter.
One thing we've learned from working with the farmers is that they don't want to harm the environment, and just providing support and education of simple ways they can do that through improving best practices, but also having specific measures for their individual farms. So each farmer as part of this project got a water and environmental management plan which identified the bespoke measures that they could do on their farm.
Is that the lesson to learn from this, that if we want to improve water quality, ultimately the only way that that can be achieved is farm by farm with bespoke plans for each of those farms?
It's really about putting the right measures in the right place, and you do need to address that at a field scale on each farm.
So I'm wrong. It's not even farm by farm. It's field by field.
It really is, yes. Each field has different drainage pathways, different soil types and different risk categories, and they need to be properly understood.
Lorraine Gaston from Uisce Éireann there, and thanks to the O'Donoghues for showing us the farm in Drumminick and what it is that they've done in the last 2 years. Win-win-win stuff. Measurable improvements in water quality, less money spent on pesticides, better grass growth. I want to stay with pesticide use and take a look at the bigger picture here. I'm joined in studio by Dr. Dara Stanley from UCD's Ag Science Department. Good morning, Dara. How are you? We're obsessed with nitrogen levels on the land at the moment because of the possible loss of the nitrates derogation on some farms. So pesticides don't really get talked about a huge amount. How big a problem are they?
Well, the first thing to say is that pesticides are a really important part of modern farming. They allow us to produce safe food, a lot of food, and good quality food. So pesticides are really used widely in modern agriculture. But at the same time, when we use pesticides, they end up in our crops, in our fields, but they also end up in the wider environment. And when I talk about pesticides, I'm talking about herbicides or weed killers, fungicides and insecticides. Okay. And in Ireland, with our grass-based agricultural systems, predominantly grass-based, we use a lot of herbicide. We use a good bit of fungicide then in our crop production and fruits and things like that. And then we use smaller amounts of insecticide.
You were involved in a research project where you confirmed that bees were picking up pesticides on plants and bringing them back into the hive. What impact did they have on the hive?
Yes, we've just heard that the pesticides kind of impacts in terms of water and water quality, but pesticides can also have impacts for human health, and they also end up in the wider environment. So we had a project that ran for the last number of years, and we were interested in looking at residues of pesticides in soils and in the nectar and pollen of crops and of wild plants. So what we found was that a variety of different pesticide residues in soils, but we also found them in the nectar and pollen of crops and of wild plants growing in field margins and hedgerows around fields. But the interesting thing was we found pesticides that hadn't been sprayed in that particular year. And we also found residues of pesticides in fields, in fact, where pesticides had never been applied. So what this suggests is that pesticides can move readily through the environment. Again, we've heard how they move through water, but they can also move potentially by drifting through the air and things when they're sprayed. And as a result, they're ending up in these non-target places. So bees then will visit crops and wild plants that produce nectar and pollen, and they can pick up residues of pesticides and bring them back to their colonies. And now we know pesticides, particularly insecticides, are designed to kill insects. Of course, they can have impacts on bees. But whether these small, low-level residues have impacts is much harder to tell. But there was a big European study that took place over the last couple of years, and as many of the sites were in Ireland. And they looked at the pesticide residues that bumblebees were bringing back in their pollen, their pollen sacs on the side of their legs. And they found where there were more residues or riskier pesticide residues in the bee pollen, the colonies were performing less well. So it seems that these low residues or these cocktail of residues that can be found within the environment can have knock-on impacts on the likes of bees.
And that's the key thing here, isn't it? Cocktail. It's the mix of these individual pesticides, which in and of themselves might be well below the maximum permissible or minimum permissible level, but we don't know what impact they have when they all get mixed together.
Yeah, so pesticides go through quite a stringent risk assessment process to allow them to be used. But of course, like every risk assessment process, there are limitations to it. So when it comes to bees, the risk assessment process looks at single chemicals individually. And also it's very reliant on looking just at honeybees. And honeybees are one species of bee, but they differ a lot in their biology and ecology from things like bumblebees and solitary bees. But also the risk assessment process begins to look at lethal levels of pesticides. But of course, pesticides may not necessarily kill bees, but they might have what we call sublethal effects. They might affect their reproduction and things like that. But the risk assessment process does not take into account this cocktail effect. So currently we aren't really protecting bees or other non-target organisms from this variety of residues that might be found in the environment.
Obviously the majority of herbicides are used in an agricultural setting, but how significant is the contribution from landscaping, from gardening, from management companies, from the management of, you know, campuses like UCD or RTE?
Yeah, so we know a lot about what pesticides are used in agriculture because we have to collect really good pesticide usage statistics to report back to the EU. And also agriculture or all professional users need to go through pesticide training.
But less so in the amateur settings.
But then when it comes to the amateur setting, you or I or anyone can walk into a shop and we can buy pesticides to apply in our garden or to apply in the road verge outside of our house. And there's no statistics collected on how much they're used, and also we may not be trained users. So there's quite a difference in how pesticides are applied in these two settings. Now, this is, we have to mention as well that a lot of things campuses and councils and things are really trying to reduce their pesticide usage. But until now, there are plans to improve this, but until now, we just simply don't know how much is being used in these settings.
Bottom line, put down the knapsack, pick up the strimmer at the right time of year.
Well, that is ideal. I mean, the solution, well, it would be ideal to stop using them altogether. But of course, in many situations, we can't. So if we could try to reduce to use them, or maybe not to use them in situations where they're potentially not needed.
Dr. Dara Stanley, thank you very much for joining us this morning. If you are on Irish TikTok, this will be a familiar voice to you.
Well, lads. Well, we're gathered. I'm here now today now with Brenda, lads. We're going looking around the farm here now today. We're going to go up here now. We're going to get into the Kubota tractor. We're going to go up here now to have a look at the cows and hope to name of God they're still there.
Finn Walsh is a dairy farmer from Patrickswell, County Limerick, and TikTok can't get enough of him. He has amassed over 150,000 followers, lapping up his posts about daily life on the farm. Not content with TV and radio stardom, our Brenda Donoghue visited him at home on the farm to see could he make her a TikTok superstar too.
Well, Brenda, you're after making it up and you brought the weather with you.
Where the hell are we?
We're in Limerick on lovely Walsh's farm. So we're here about 130 years, dairy farmer.
On this farm?
On this farm, yeah. And started off with 6 acres and now we have 90 cows and we're running just under 200 acres rented and owned land.
Well, show me around a little bit, but I was just thinking as I was coming here, you're very close to Limerick.
Yeah,
we're... It'd be worth a fair few bob, this land now. You could sell it. Very sought after.
Yeah, but it's not for sale and never be for sale because it's we view it differently than most people, most farmers do the same. It's not the value of the land because it's selling the land ain't worth nothing because you can't farm it. It's always going to stay green for as long as I live anyway. It's going to stay green. Father now is running at the moment and he's here with my younger brother and I was kicked out of the nest so I had to go and find my own way. So I'm outside in West Limerick working away myself on a 300 cow farm. So
why were you thrown out of the nest?
Sure, I suppose myself, I have an older brother as well, two of us, there's not enough work here for us and we were sent away, and then obviously as soon as we left there was too much work here, so he needed the younger brother. So the younger brother's here now and he enjoys the place, he enjoys working here. I think mainly because it's handy, it's the only place he gets to go home for breakfast and go back to bed. I'd say when I'm starting in after milking cows, he's getting back into the cot, so he enjoys it anyway, that's for sure.
And do you love cows?
Oh yeah, like beyond everything else. Just going out into a field of cows, grass is green, cows are grazing and they're happy. But being able to work with them is a joy. Now at times they can break your heart, but most of the time I like to say, they're perfect.
There's a fine, healthy smell in the yard.
Yeah, well, what you're standing next to there now, Brenda, is our silage pit. And before we go anywhere, I'm going to have to fix it because it looks like Cullen was driving yesterday and he flicked off, I'd say, half the tyres on this side. So we'll throw a few back on and get it tidied up and then we'll take another weight in.
Look, you have to get water up. Is that silage water?
No, it's only rainwater. You're all right.
Are you sure?
Small bit smelly now because it's been inside the tyre, but you'll be all right. Welcome to the countryside.
The things I do for this job.
Welcome to the countryside, Brenda. Right, shall we go up now, Brenda, and we go look at the cows above in the field? Hop into the Jeep there now, so Brenda, we go find these cows.
Okay, hang on. So Finn, you've become really an accidental TikTok social media star. How did it all happen?
Well, it started back in 2020. I was working at the time, would you believe, during COVID, obviously. I was working in Dunn Stores on a night shift, so... Obviously, I was all night out working, and then during the day, I was kind of sleeping a small bit, and then I'd way too much time. And then I used to put up kind of stuff on Snapchat and stuff like that, and there was friends of mine going, "Jeez, that's fair funny. You should put that up." So I started doing that, and they kind of got a bit of traction, and I said, right. And then I started to put up videos then with a calf, then that was born premature. People loved that, and sure, everyone had time in their hands, everyone was stuck at home. So we stay going.
For somebody who's never seen you on social media, can you describe what your content is or your videos are?
Yeah, I suppose my videos are kind of a day-to-day of Irish life. There's farming involved, there's kind of relationships, like stuff with my girlfriend, there's just Irish kind of drinking culture. And I start every video with, well, let's.
What is the most popular one you've posted? Like, give us an idea how many million views.
So I posted one at the start of summer that kind of kicked off this whole change, transformation of the channel. I posted one about silage and that one took off, and that was just basically talking about the excitement and the absolute madness that comes along with silage season within Irish farming.
I don't know about you, know, I woke this morning, I walk out the door and I got an awful smell of silliness, boys. An awful smell of silliness. Something in the air. I came out with a can of Red Bull in the hand and I just cracked it open and I swear to God I went silage. I look at
that. That one got, I think, 400,000 views or something like that. So it's, I suppose that one had a massive reaction. Bonos! Moves! Marco, six, six, six! Here we are now, Brenda. These are the money makers now. Be out here now, but all I'm going to say is now, keep an eye on the ground there now. They don't leave any presents for you. We're milking kind of the larger cows, as you can see. They're all kind of a Holstein cow. Big framey cows, kind of a larger animal, like we like a big cow. A lot of places have gone, they're shrinking the cow size, they want a smaller cow, they want a crossbred cow. We're men of tradition. We like big lumps of cows with big bags and loads of milk. That's what we want, and we just want to do it all on grass. So we're achieving that the best we can, and these cows are some of the best genetic merit cows in the country. So they're, it's a brilliant herd of cows.
One of your TikToks that I found very funny was you were in the milking parlour and you were trying to milk the cows, but you weren't in great humour.
I was milking outside at work and wasn't in the best of form, not one bit of it. Cows were coming in, they wouldn't walk in for me, they wouldn't walk out for me. There was muck all over the place, they were kicking, they were knocking them off. I stuck on all sorts of music, from country music all the way up along, everything. Couldn't find something that would keep me going. Next thing in, I found ABBA. And then I just went down an ABBA rabbit hole. And ever since now, if I'm having a bad evening, ABBA's on. So it's the only way that I get through milkings at the moment.
Your poor girlfriend, how does she put up with it?
Ah, she's fine. She's happy all we do. At the moment now, we've been doing kind of videos there, documenting her move from, she's a Cork woman, moved to Limerick. Now, she doesn't want to be in the videos. She's happy
What's
out
her
for
name?
Me. Rachel.
Rachel, so, okay.
Happy out for me to do the videos, but she doesn't want to be in them. So I just document what's going on and stuff, funny stuff that's happening.
Like.
Well, she arrived up and we went off shopping. And I done a video about it. And I said we'd go and get a few bits. And these bits now, I swear to God, all we came out with was baskets. There could be 15 baskets inside that house now for everything. There's baskets for her stuff, there's baskets for my stuff, there's baskets for toilet paper, there's baskets for towels, there's baskets for knives and forks. Everything. If you can put something into a basket, she'll buy the basket.
Do you dream about cows?
Oh yeah. If Rachel was here now, you could ask her. The amount of times I've been sleep talking and she's there, like, she's like, I swear to God you're in a mart. And I'm there inside and I'm bidding on cows and everything inside marts, or else I'm out hunting cows. She said she woke up one day and I was shouting inside my sleep. And she was like, she thought I was having a nightmare. No, I was actually hunting cows. Moves! Six, six! It's a privilege, like just the luck I have to have been born into this. And to love it as much as I do. Like, it is a brilliant job. It's a brilliant life. And honestly, I'm incredibly lucky.
Finn Walsh in Patrick's Well in Limerick. And the really important news from that report is that Brenda's wardrobe suffered no lasting injury. More after this break.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
Almost 25 to 9 on your Saturday morning. If you are female and of an entrepreneurial bent, this next item is going to be of interest to you because you are being invited to apply for the next round of the popular Acorns programme. Acorns is a free initiative for early stage female entrepreneurs based in rural Ireland. It's been running since 2014. It's funded through the Rural Innovation and Development Fund by the Department of Agriculture. Central to its popularity is the idea that early stage entrepreneurs learn best from their peers. On the line, we have three female entrepreneurs who have participated in Acorns and are now running their own very, very interesting businesses. Good morning, Maura, Aisling and Corina from Sligo, Kerry and Clare, respectively. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Aisling, can I begin with you, please? Aisling Kelly of the Sligo Oyster Experience. Tell me, which did you fall in love with first? Was it oysters or was it Glenn the oyster farmer?
Great question, Philip. I think it was the oyster first, and then very, very quickly I was smitten by the oyster farmer.
Your dad was an immensely important figure in your life. When he stepped off stage, almost exactly coincidentally, I think practically the night that you returned home, Glenn stepped on stage.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, my lovely dad, Kevin Kelly, used to run the pub that we lived above, which is now my coffee shop. And he passed away. I decided to move home and I gave my notice in. And then I met my now lovely husband, Glenn Hunter, the oyster farmer.
Why not leave the pub as a pub? Because pints of stout and oysters is nothing new, but cups of coffee and oysters is a bit more novel.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I suppose when I was coming from, I was coming from Dublin, and basically things had changed a lot in Sligo, and the footfall outside the premises was all morning trade. Things had gone in and kept failing. So restaurants, pubs. So I just decided to do a coffee shop, and it's worked. I'm in my 11th year. So thank God. Yeah, it's going strong.
And is it largely a summertime trade, or are there people having coffee and oysters in the depths of January?
Yeah, it's turned into, so firstly, WB's Coffee House started as just serving the local community. So people on their lunch breaks and having a break at leisure. And then I introduced the oysters in 2018. And now every single day we have people drinking coffee, eating oysters. And it's turned from seasonal, oysters are being eaten now every single day. And it's getting bigger and bigger.
How complementary a taste pairing are oysters and coffee?
Coffee is probably a bit too strong, but we do have wine. So you can have your nice glass of wine and your oysters. Yeah.
Okay. How did Acorns help you?
Acorns was fantastic. So I was on the second year of Acorns. And I applied for it, and I get emotional now every time I think of it. But the first few years of business is so challenging. You're on your own. You're trying to learn everything involved in business. So I applied for it. I didn't get it the first year, applied again, and I got it. And I was so excited because the minute I went into the room in Mullingar, there's like just 50 women were there and all in the same headspace as you. They're really, you know, we're so excited about the business, but it's terrifying. You're putting everything out there. And I just found it brilliant to be with all the same-minded women who were striving for the same thing.
I can hear something has changed in your voice. You do get emotional about it. Why?
Yeah, every time. Because I know there's women right now, like I was, who are sitting at home and they feel alone in it. It just always makes me very emotional. And it just, Acorns brings you on. The next thing, you've just these group of women around you. You've your lead entrepreneurs. You meet every month. You have your goals. All of a sudden, you have a team around you that is supporting you. And if you're if you're feeling overwhelmed or you're not sure what to do, somebody there has a solution.
That's great.
That's why I feel it's really good.
So there's the solidarity of knowing you have this sisterhood to go back to at the end of the month and report, even if you haven't had anybody to talk to from day to day.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Stay with us. Maura Sheehy of Maura's Cottage Flowers, just outside Tralee in Kerry. Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
You decided to start the business after your seventh child started school. Most people would have said that you deserved a cup of coffee or maybe a glass of wine and some oysters. What prompted you to head into business at that stage?
Well, I didn't intend to go into business. I was looking for a bit of time for myself, but it's just the way things happened. I went back to education, started studying horticulture. I found I had a lot of flowers the first year after my first course, and I just wanted to share the joy of that. Never in 100 years would I have thought I would have set up a business. So, yeah.
What is the business?
Has been wonderful to... Our business, we grow flowers organically in our garden. We grow in just over 2 acres just outside Tralee, and we mainly supply to weddings, but we do flowers for all locations and have some lovely loyal customers built over the last 10 years.
How did you engineer getting Graham Norton to wear one of your buttonholes, or was it just luck?
No, you have to think outside the box, I suppose. So yeah, I decided I might just avail of the opportunity, because I'm a huge fan, and I contacted the people in charge of the Stone Writers Week and said I might suggest that I might bring some flowers. So he very kindly gave me a shout out during the evening of reading.
Look, fair play to you on the business success, but I'm fascinated by the fact that you, in an earlier stage of your life, had decided that horticulture wasn't for you because you had hay fever. How did you get around that?
Yeah, so I suppose when I was finishing school, it would have been my top choice, but hay fever wasn't as easy to manage back then. So, yeah, I'm a great believer in things happening at the right time. So, yeah,
okay.
I always, since I was very young, had a great interest in growing, and that was nurtured as a child, and did a little bit of growing while the lads were small, but it was hard because the football was being kicked against the cosmos and sweet peas wouldn't have been staked that very often. So, it's fantastic. It's great now to be able to look back over the last 10 years coming on this morning.
Okay.
Allowed me to reflect on that, and it's wonderful, yes.
Well, so obviously, big thanks to the Department of Education for taking the seven of them off your hands for a few hours every day so that you could get down to business. But what do you feel you owe Acorns?
Acorns needs to be shouted from the rooftops. The Department of Agriculture is fantastic. It funds this for the last 11 years. And the difference it makes, it doesn't make a difference to just me and, you know, myself or Ashton or the ladies. It's the ripple effect of the families and the team that we bring on board. It's huge, hugely successful. So yeah, it gave me a sense of myself, because like that, you do get lost being a mom. It gave me a sense of myself and a sense of direction. Helped me get over the imposter syndrome. And like Ashton said, she put it very well. That's the feeling we all have the minute we enter the doors and shook Paula Fitzsimon's hand. We may as well have got an injection of confidence, and confidence is the key to everything, really, isn't it?
An injection of confidence. That's a very, very neat way of putting it, isn't it? Stay on the line again, Maura. I want to go to Corina Rosengrave of Burrenview Farm in Crusheen, County Clare. Good morning, Corina. Have you interrupted the milking to take our call, or is it all over?
Oh, all the milking is done from the early hours in the morning, so I'm enjoying a cup of tea while I'm listening to the girls' amazing stories.
The lockdown closed down your after-school childcare business. How did you make the leap from that to free-range eggs?
Yeah, so I suppose I was at home and I had my first little girl, CJ, and my after-school business was shut down because of COVID. So my granny, who passed away in 2023, she always had 12 hens at home, and she would have fed the parish with the eggs. She never, ever ate an egg, but she just loved the hen. So I suppose I always said to her from a very early age, Granny, why don't you sell the eggs? And she just said, no, I just love the hen. So I suppose the idea stemmed from there, and I got myself a few hens. And I started to sell through an honesty box at home. So my sister then was home after her first child in 2023, and we went to the ploughing championships. And it poured out of the heavens the same year, and into the Acorns tent we went for shelter. And my sister says, why don't you apply for Acorns? And I said, no way, sure, I'm just a farmer.
Go away, Corina. Was it really that much of a coincidence? You were just taking shelter from the rain.
Yes, literally just taking shelter
well,
from the rain.
Thank God you didn't walk into the RTE tent.
Well, I might have a job with yourself if I did. But I was like, no, Mary, I can't. Sure, I'm farming at home with my brother. And we are milking cows, we have a suckler herd, we have a pedigree herd. And then I was like, sure, what would I be doing going to Acorns? Because, you know, it's for women in business. So I sat back anyway and I said, you know what, let's give it a go. So I literally applied on the last day of the applications. And I went to Mullingar then after getting accepted. And I didn't know what I was walking into. And I say to Paula to this day, I was lucky that I didn't walk out, because I was like, these are business women with great ideas, and I'm a farmer from the west of Ireland saying, oh, I might have an egg idea. So I stayed put. We were put into round tables after lunch, and I was put with a lead entrepreneur, Trina. So you're in smaller groups, And as we sat around the table, I began to relax and realise, no, this is okay. And you were in a safe environment surrounded by like-minded women.
And because of that, having walked in, as you say yourself, just a farmer from Clare, did you walk out a businesswoman?
I walked out a businesswoman after the first day with confidence, with ideas for the farm at home, with goals that I knew I had to meet for our next round table when we met with Trina. And from there, I've developed a business. I have a registered hinge shed now. It's a small hinge shed for the moment. Would like to expand down the line.
Well, hang on, how big? Have you gone from granny's a dozen hens to how many?
Yes, yeah, so I have a couple of hundred at the moment. So I'm just supplying locally through my honesty box at home. And from that, like, it's just given such confidence for the farm that you can diversify. Because farming, a lot of people say, oh, you have cows, you milk cows for the rest of your days.
And that you're handcuffed to doing the same thing, but you've just proved it, that you can actually diversify.
You can diversify. So my late father would have always farmed, a suckler farmer. My mam kept the farm going while we were younger. And then from there, myself and my brother now have diversified into, we have a dairy farm. So we have Suckler's Dairy, a Pedigree Limousine and Shirley Herd. Okay. And now we have the free range eggs. But it is all thanks to Paul Fitzsimons and the Acorns, because without them, you wouldn't have the confidence to keep going. And you get such a safe, secure circle of friends that on a bad day, you can pick up the phone, have a chat with them. And then the other side of it, you get to just go forward with your achievements, and you get the rewards from it and get to celebrate with like-minded women. It's
brilliant.
Great. And Paula Fitzsimons is an amazing woman. And I suppose it is thanks to Paula and the Department of Agriculture that the programme is there. And if there's any woman sitting listening to your programme today, get your application in, because September the 22nd is the deadline. And get your application in, you won't regret it. Even if it's a small idea, it can grow to something big.
It's almost like you did go into the RTE tent, because you've done my job for me in telling everybody when it is that they have to apply by. Karina Rosengrave, Burnsview Farm in Crusheen, thank you very much. Aisling Kelly of SligoOysterExperience.ie as well, and MauraCottageFlowers.ie, Maura Sheehy outside of Tralee. Thank you all three very much for that. This was the warmest summer since records began, Met Éireann told us this week, and not just on land. The temperatures of waters off the west coast have been heating up, resulting in a lot of changes to marine life. 6 months ago in the programme, you might remember 10-year-old Jonathan Padden from North Mayo telling us about the tiny loggerhead turtle that he found on Unfolmore Beach in Blacksod Bay.
I was walking on Fulmore Beach with my mom and dad. We seen a strange rock, but I came closer and seen that it was a turtle.
So we went up to Gemma's house because she takes care of the dolphins that get dried up.
We decided to call it Columbus because it came from an island in the middle of the ocean between America and Spain.
Columbus is alive and well, and next week or the week after is being transported to warmer waters near the equator by the Irish Navy. He was rehabilitated in Galway Atlantiquaria by, among others, Tara Noonan. And Lorna Siggins went with Jonathan to say goodbye to Columbus.
This is the smallest turtle I think we've had.
Right.
So being able to rehabilitate a turtle of this size that we're able to put back into the ocean this young, that they get to live the rest of their life out in the ocean, is very exciting for us as well.
And you don't know the gender?
No, they're too small to tell the gender yet.
Okay.
So, yeah. But we do think that Columbus is a very fitting name regardless.
When we picked him up, he was very, very small. Now he's definitely the size of two rocks.
Did you get a fright when you thought a rock was moving in your hands?
Yeah, his head tilted back and I thought, wow, moving rock.
Were you surprised to know that Columbus was going to be going with four others?
Five turtles?
Yeah, because there's four in Dingle.
Jeez, I didn't know there was four more. Well, I'm glad now that he's not alone. I do have a few questions. What country is he going to?
My understanding is that the Navy is going to be travelling down into warmer waters, and when they find a place that's suitable, like that the temperatures are good, and maybe where they see like that there's lots of jellyfish, which is what they like to eat, maybe they'll decide that that's a good spot for him, and then he'll make his way to whichever country he likes from there.
So you don't fully know where he's going yet?
Not 100%, no. We just know that they're going to be getting into much warmer water, so they'll be happy, and then, because they'll obviously be dropping them into the ocean anyway.
What did he eat in the aquarium?
In the aquarium, we feed them things like sprat and squid and prawns and things like that. But in the ocean, they mostly eat jellyfish.
So they hunt for jellyfish?
Exactly, yeah. Because they have the hardened things over their faces, and they have spikes in their throat, so they don't feel the sting of the jellyfish. Yeah. So they can just eat jellyfish all day.
Yeah. So any type of jellyfish?
Any type of jellyfish, yeah.
Can they move on land?
They can a little bit across sand, because they can move their flippers in through the sand and push themselves up and down.
Yeah. So
that's what the mom turtles do when they're laying their eggs.
Yeah. Cool. is his shell a part of them?
His shell is a part of them, because sometimes, you know, we see in the cartoons and stuff that they'll pull themselves right in and everything in, but their shell and their ribcage are actually the same thing. It is just part of their body.
What kind of ship is he going on?
He's going a very, very big navy ship, yes.
You know when they're leaving them out in the sea? Will they all stick together? Or will they spread apart looking for food?
They'll probably spread apart. So turtles normally live kind of individual lives. They're not like a shoaling animal. They don't stick with a lot of the same turtles, and they tend to just do their own thing.
Yeah.
They might be together for a while, but if they each find different jellyfish, they might head in different directions then.
How deep can they go in the sea? If they went to like a very, very deep place, how?
Would normally stay between 0 and 30 meters depth. So it's quite a good distance for them to dive to, but they have to stay near the surface because they breathe air from the surface like we do.
How do you feel about them going to sea?
I feel pretty good. Bye, Columbus. Hope you have a great life in the wild. I hope you do very well. So long, Columbus.
Lorna Siggins with Jonathan Padden in Galway at Lantaquaria. I think the search for Derek Mooney's replacement might have been over already. As you heard, Columbus is now one of 5 loggerhead turtles to have survived being washed up on Irish beaches in Kerry, Clare, Galway and Mayo this year. An unprecedented number in a very short space of time. Dr. Kevin Flannery, marine biologist, founder of the Ocean Aquarium in Dingle, and Captain Jason O'Brien from the Irish Navy, who are responsible for Columbus's safe passage now, both join me on the line. Good morning, gentlemen. Kevin.
Good morning, Philip.
4 other loggerhead turtles washed up on Irish beaches this summer. Where did they come on shore and what kind of condition were they in?
They're absolutely in great condition at the moment, but initially when they were found washed up along the west coast from Mayo, Galway, Clare, Inch, a young Ukrainian young lady found one, Senya, over an Inch, all in June, July, virtually. There was a heat wave that came up, Philip, from the south, according to the Marine Institute, and it came up. And obviously, these little fellows got mixed up and got too far north, pushed too far north, and then washed ashore. And these are the lucky ones, the ones that have survived. People walking the shoreline obviously picked them up, as I say, above in Mayo, Lahinch, and all along the west coast. And there was probably more that didn't make it because they're absolutely tiny. And this has me flabbergasted because usually we'd get an odd loggerhead. Or like we did last year, we got a green turtle, which is very unusual because there's only a certain number of these species, but very rarely do you get a green turtle. But the loggerheads have become more common, but nothing as small as these, and they're quite young. And because of this, we've called in Dr. Tom Dyle, is on his way up to us at the moment, to look at the DNA profile of these turtles, because I don't think they're crossing all the way from the Gulf of Mexico, which we had assumed down through the years when they come across with the Gulf Stream, and then they get cold shock because the water gets cold, and then they're virtually comatose them when they're washed ashore along the west coast here. But now we're thinking they may be coming up from the Cape Verdes and have come up with these heat waves and getting washed in. So Tom Dyle from UCC and, would you believe, the University of Florida are looking at the DNA profile of these, and maybe they're coming up to us from the south rather than coming across from the US.
Tom Doyle is the jellyfish expert in UCC. We talked to him when Loch Hyne had that jellyfish purple stinger invasion late last year. Do you suspect that these turtles are following the jellyfish, which are moving into the warmer waters off our shores now because of these heat waves? They're following the jellyfish, which are their food source.
That's a possibility, but my honest opinion is that they're in this large heat, warm water, and then when we get these heat waves, which have happened a bit too regularly at the moment, and obviously climate change, and when they come up with this thermocline, warm water, then they get mixed up and all of a sudden they get the cold shock.
Okay.
And they can't make it back down because they're too small.
Which is now the job that falls to the Irish Navy to get them back to warmer waters, which is where Captain Jason O'Brien comes in. Good morning, Captain.
Good morning. Good morning. So, just for it's actually Lieutenant Commander, just in case anyone's going Captain.
Lieutenant Commander, excuse me.
Promoted.
What's
no captain's higher? Captain is higher. Captain would be the man in charge of the ship carrying them down there. What's the plan, Jason?
The plan is for the five young turtles to embark the Samuel Beckett on Monday the 22nd. And they're going to be put under the care and custody of a number of officers who've kind of have experience already in this type of task. One sub-lieutenant, Phil Hyland, he's actually was a part of the crew who took down Kroga from Kevin in 2023. So the team look after the turtles, take them on board, keep them in a nice cool area where they're given food and cream and maintain them at a certain temperature. And they kind of become little celebrities on board.
And as novel as this might sound for the Irish Navy, do you actually, as a part of your mission, have wildlife conservation stitched in there?
We do, as a kind of an additional support role, you know, for the Marine Institutes and the Department of Marine Agriculture. So we do assist, definitely.
What do the turtles do for morale on board the boats?
Trust, they're fantastic. They're like little celebrities on board. I remember in 2023 when we took down Kroga, everybody was obsessed with him. Like, I didn't have to look for anyone to mind him. It was a team of people volunteering. He was like our little celebrity.
Okay, and what happens when you get to warmer waters? Presumably you can't just throw them over the edge of the boat.
Correct. Even though the temperatures at the moment are around 15, 16 degrees, so, and we're going to go out, we're going to look for an area around 19, 20 degrees seawater temperature. We'll put them into the ribs in their container, and we stop the rib, bring it to a complete halt, make sure the weather conditions are appropriate, and release them one by one.
And I could ask you where you're going to this, but if you told us, you would have to kill all of us, because there's operational security, I would imagine.
That is correct. That's why we can't tell exactly where we're going to be releasing them or what time. The ship will be out for a couple of weeks, and it'll be during that patrol that they're going to monitor the seawater temperature, monitor the waves conditions, and when they feel appropriate, they're going, okay, give the turtles the best possible chance.
All right. Well, good luck and Godspeed. Lieutenant Commander Jason O'Brien, thank you very much. And Kevin Flannery, Dr. Kevin Flannery in the Ocean Aquarium in Dingle. That is all that we have time for today on the Countrywide Crew. Amandine Paso Devine set sail for warmer waters. Jamie Doyle navigated by the stars, and Brenda Donoghue kept us off the rocks. Sinead Mooney is on the way with your playback until the same time next week. Have a good weekend.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.